8.
Part 1. Listening Comprehension. Section A. Talk. Japanese Attitudes and Ideals. Japan traditionally was an aristocratic society, and despite the impact of industrialization and the introduction of the principles of democracy, it remains an aristocratic society in many ways today. At the foundation of Japanese society are several beliefs that are of particular importance. The first is the belief in hierarchy, that is, all men and all nations occupy a definite, clearly defined position in relation to one another. Thus, traditional Japan was organized into rigidly defined social classes. The highest-ranking social class was composed of the imperial family and the members of the court, nobility. Beneath this class were the samurai warriors. Next in rank to the samurai were the farmers. Below the farmers were the craftsmen. And at the bottom of the formal class structure were the merchants. Outside the regular social classes and beneath them all were the outcasts, people for whom there was no place in the formal structure of the society. Most of the outcasts were permitted to do only those jobs considered to be of such low standing that no one else would do them. With the development of trade and the coming of industrialization, the order in which the various social classes were ranked began to change. Merchants and craftsmen, for example, became more highly valued, and the introduction of new occupations led to somewhat more flexibility in the social system. However, the system continued to be based on the idea of hierarchy. Closely related to that idea of hierarchy is the belief that each person should occupy his proper place in society. And the Japanese developed an elaborate social code which regulated human activities in practically every area of life. Traditionally, the proper place of an individual in society was determined by the social class of his parents. There were, however, some situations in which a person could move up or down within the social system. As in the case of the belief in hierarchy, the belief that each person should occupy his proper place in society was modified by the introduction of industrial techniques, but it was not basically changed. A third belief is that each person is bound by a series of fundamental obligations to the society, to other individuals, and to himself. These obligations are, in a sense, debts that have to be honored. Traditionally, failure to fulfill these obligations would result in individuals being shamed, one of the worst things that can happen to a Japanese. These obligations are of two major types, gimu and giri. Gimu is an obligation or debt that can never be fully repaid. Thus, the Japanese believe that each person owes a debt to the past, to the Japanese heritage, and to those people, including one's ancestors, who made that heritage possible. And the individual is expected to live his life in accordance with that heritage as one way of partially repaying the debt. Traditionally, gimu also applied to an individual's relation to his parents, to the emperor, and to the nation. In each case, the debt owed by the individual was so great that he could never expect to pay more than a fraction of the total debt. Payments on these debts took the form of obedience and loyalty to parents, to the emperor, and to the nation. Giri, on the other hand, is a debt that can and must be repaid in full. Giri is owed both to the world and to oneself. Giri owed to the world includes obligations to one's superiors, to one's family, and to others who provide some service or perform some act of kindness. It also includes obligations to those who, in some other way, are of benefit to the individual. Giri owed to oneself largely involves maintaining and protecting one's honor and reputation. Thus, traditionally, the Japanese were highly sensitive to situations which could result in embarrassment or insult. The belief in giri also led the Japanese to consider it an obligation to themselves to never admit failure or ignorance. And finally, giri to oneself demands that one live according to one's proper station in life.
Section B, conversation.
Oh, me. Open another window.
There aren't any more.
Well, we'd better telephone room service for an axe.
Daisy, my dearest, forget about the heat. You just make it 10 times worse by crabbing about it.
Why not let her alone, old sport? You're the one that wanted to go to town.
It certainly is a great expression of yours.
What is?
All that old sport business. Where'd you pick that up?
Tom, if you're going to make personal remarks, I won't stay here a minute.
Imagine marrying anyone in this heat.
I was married in June.
Mr. Gadsby, I understand that you're an Oxford man.
Not exactly.
Oh, no, I understood that you went to Oxford.
I went there, yes. It was an opportunity they gave to some of the officers after the armistice. Were you in the war, Mr. Buchanan?
No, I wasn't in the war. I'd like to know what kind of a row it is you're trying to cause in my house.
He isn't causing a row. You're causing a row. Please, have a little self-control.
Self-control? Have a little self-control? I suppose the easiest thing is to just sit back and relax while Mr. Nobody from Nowhere makes love to your wife. Is that it? Well, if that is, Daisy, count one thing. Nowadays, people begin by sneering at family life and family institutions, and before you know it, they'll throw out all that overboard and have intermarriage between black and white.
We're all white here.
I've got something to tell you, old sport.
Please don't.
No, Daisy, listen.
Oh, please, let's all go home.
No, no.
Let's all go home, please.
Nobody's going home. I'm going to sit down right here, and I'll listen to what it is Mr. Gadsby has to tell me. Yes, thank you.
Your wife doesn't love you. She's never loved you. She loves me.
You must be crazy.
The only reason she married you was because I was poor, and she was tired of waiting, and that was a mistake, but in her heart, she's never loved anyone except for me.
That's a goddamn lie. Sit down, Jordan and Nick. Daisy loved me when she married me, and she loves me now, and what's more, I love her. Now, I'll admit that every now and then she gets a little confused and gets involved in things she doesn't really understand. But I've also been known to go off on a spree and make a goddamn fool of myself, but I have always come back, and in my heart, I always love her.
You are revolting. Remember why we left Chicago? Huh? I suppose you don't tell us of that story of that little spree of yours.
Daisy, just tell him the truth. Just tell him. Tell him you never loved him, and it will all be wiped out forever.
Why? How could I love him, possibly, and...
You never loved him.
I never loved him.
Not on our honeymoon?
No.
And not that day I picked you up in my arms and I carried you all the way down from the punch bowl so that your little feet wouldn't even get wet?
Open a window.
Daisy, Daisy, I love you.
Please, don't. Oh, you want too much. I love you now. Isn't that enough? I can't help what's past. I did love him once, but I loved you, too.
You loved me, too.
There are things between Daisy and me that you will never know. Things that neither one of us can ever forget. Darling, I'm going to take better care of you from now on, too.
You don't seem to understand. You're not going to take care of her anymore.
I'm not. Why is that?
Daisy's leaving you.
I am, though.
No, she's not leaving me. Certainly not for a common swindler who'd have to steal the ring to put on her finger. Section C, News Broadcast. News Item 1.
The OPEC oil cartel has agreed to keep a 24.5 million barrel a day production ceiling. Gambling that demand will rise in the Northern Hemisphere winter, the OPEC Secretary General, Subotto, said the present limit would allow the 12-nation cartel to achieve its goal of raising prices in the coming months. OPEC nations have pumped 300,000 barrels a day over the self-imposed ceiling set in September. Oil prices plunged to a little more than $14 a barrel Tuesday, well under OPEC's $21 a barrel target. Oil prices have dropped 20% this year because of a weak global economy and additional production by non-OPEC countries. Senior delegates at the Vienna summit said Saudi Arabia and Iran, the cartel's two largest producers, were flexible about reducing supply if it translates into high prices in the coming months.
News item 2.
This report is a gift to the opposition, and the Labour Party leader, John Smith, was quick to highlight what he called this devastating catalogue of incompetence, mismanagement, and waste of public money. The report, said Mr. Smith, identified a departure from the public standards observed in Britain for 140 years. The British public now clearly understands that one of the reasons why his government is a government of high taxation is that it's also a government of waste and incompetence. John Major rejected that charge outright. He said the report did not suggest any decline in standards. Rather, it supported the government's drive for efficiency. Britain's public services remain at the highest caliber anywhere in the world. But he wasn't let off the hook. Unusually, another opposition party, the Liberal Democrats, echoed Labour's grazing line. Their leader, Paddy Ashdown, asked, could Mr. Major understand the anger of ordinary people being asked to pay higher taxes only to see his government hand that money over to quangos and executive agencies to throw away on waste, corruption, and fraud? It was inevitable that this report would be used as partisan ammunition against the Prime Minister, but it does raise important questions about the control of public money at a time when the government has sought to put the importance of basic values like honesty and responsibility at the top of its political agenda.
Section B, Academic Lecture and Note-Taking Exercise. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. As you know, this morning's lecture is about back pain, one of the most common medical ailments in the developed countries today. For example, in Great Britain, the Back Pain Association tells us that 89,000 people are off work every day due to back pains. That is, some 20 million working days are lost per annum. But can we believe these statistics? I fear not, because the Back Pain Association interprets the word work as, quote, those people who are employed, unquote. Clearly, this does not take into account the vast army of mothers, housewives, children, and students who are not officially working. As a recent father myself, I can vouch for the fact that a mother works twice as hard as the average employee, and she does not get adequately paid for it. As a doctor with a busy practice, I am not able to give my wife all the help that I would like to. Therefore, she copes with our baby alone most of the day. As there are many women and some men in the same position with babies or young children and no help, I would like to concentrate on their back pain problems today. There are a number of factors which can eventually lead up to a severe bout of back pain. When the child is young, a lot of time is spent in lifting it up and putting it down. All too often this is done in a hurried way, and proper lifting techniques are not employed, resulting in a weakening of joints, ligaments, and muscles, which ultimately can produce back pain. Much cot making is necessary at this stage. Washing baby clothes, changing baby, and a whole host of other backbending acts. If the mother is overweight, has previous back problems, or is not receiving adequate nutrition, then back pain may strike her down. It may be insidious in onset, but it slowly and surely progresses to a full-blown attack of sciatica. Even today in the 1980s, with our luxury kitchens containing a vast array of labor-saving devices, people still stand badly, hoover badly, iron badly, walk badly, and even sleep badly. So what can be done to prevent back pain occurring in this very important section of society? Well, firstly, women must ensure that their diet is adequate in nutrition. A diet may well be filling, but if the food consists mainly of packaged or tinned goods, then it could lead to undernourishment. All processed foods have been treated with a host of chemicals, such as preservatives, colorings, etc. Very often, the manufacturers nobly claim that they have added extra vitamins and sometimes minerals to their products. But this claim is a joke, because if the food had not been processed in the first place, then there would be no need to reconstitute it with synthetic vitamins or minerals, the natural ones having been laundered out in the processing. Secondly, women should pay attention to their posture and movement. A mother's posture is of crucial importance whilst she is caring for a baby or young child. What often seems natural may often result in disaster. It has often been said, but it is worth repeating, that bending forward at the waist should be avoided, and that picking up should always take place by keeping the upper body straight and bending at the knees. This is a difficult technique to master at first, and people often forget it. But to avoid back pain developing, it should be practiced until it comes naturally. Making beds, standing at sinks for a long time, picking up baby, bathing baby, changing baby, hoovering, cooking, and other household activities which require bending are dangerous if executed wrongly. Worktops should be high enough to negate the need to bend forward whilst carrying out work functions. Cleaning the bath and making the beds should be done in a kneeling position. Standing for long periods of time should be avoided, and lifting babies should be done in the way previously described. So to sum up, mothers, or indeed anyone involved in looking after babies or children or carrying out household tasks, should pay particular care to their posture and moving techniques and ensure that they have a good, nutritious diet. In this way, they should be able to avoid the plague of back pain.